Hi, I'm Doug Gordon. Welcome back to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio.
You unlock this door with the key of imagination. Beyond it is another dimension. A dimension of sound. A dimension of sight. A dimension of mind. You're moving into a land of both shadow and substance, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the Twilight Zone.
That, of course, is the iconic opening of one of the most incredible TV shows ever created, The Twilight Zone. The show was hosted, produced, and written by the Emmy Award-winning Rod Serling. The Twilight Zone was an anthology series that featured compelling science fiction, fantasy, and horror stories. Most episodes featured incredible twist endings and gave you some food for thought. Speaking of food for thought, remember the episode To Serve Man?
It's a cookbook!
Rod was not a big fan of TV. As he once said, television is very much like the weather. Much can be said of it, but very damn little can be done about it. As far as I'm concerned, though, Rod Serling invented prestige TV. Rod's daughter, Ann Serling, is a writer and has written a lovely tribute to her father. It's a memoir called As I Knew Him, My Dad, Rod Serling. Ann joins us now to share some memories about her father's legacy and why she decided to write a book about it.
It was to navigate my grief. I had started another book years before that called In His Absence, and I hadn't even begun the journey of working out that whole minefield of grief. So I never finished that book. And then I began As I Knew Him. And I think in part because I find writing cathartic, as my father did. It was interesting because before I'd finished the book, I did a reading at the Paley Center, and a woman came up to me and said that her father was dying, and after she heard me read, she knew that she'd be okay. And it was such an unexpected gift in a way that something I had said, something that she'd heard had resonated, and I'd helped her. And I couldn't even speak. I just hugged her. And the second reason I wrote the book is I wanted to learn more about my dad's life, his professional life. The third reason is I wanted to dispel rumors that my father was this dark and tortured soul, because he was anything but. My dad was funny, he was silly, he loved the Flintstones, he did the best gorilla imitation you could imagine.
And getting back to what you mentioned earlier about that you were all kind of in a state of shock when your father died, that would have a lot to do with the fact that he was only 50 years old at the time, right?
Exactly. Yeah, he had turned 50 in December. He died in June, and I had just turned 20 about 3 weeks before his death.
Mm-hmm. If you don't mind my asking, can you take me back to the last time you saw your father?
Oh, the last time I saw my dad was 49 years ago. And I saw him on the 8th floor of the Strong Memorial Hospital. And it was the last time was the night before his surgery. And he told me that he loved me. And he had been told that when he came out of surgery, he might not recognize us. And he said to me, "Don't worry, I'll know who you are."
Yeah. And thank you for sharing that with me. I hope that wasn't too upsetting to have to relive that. Your dad served in the Philippines, and he received a Bronze Star and a Purple Heart. What impact did his military service have on him?
I don't know who it was that said that can change you on a cellular level, that kind of trauma. And certainly the war had a huge impact on him, as it does to anyone that we throw into these wars. He was clearly very traumatized, and I vividly remember him having nightmares. And in the morning, I would ask him what happened, and he said that he had dreamt that the enemy was coming at him. And he said that originally he was going to major in physical education because he liked working with kids. he'd worked at with the co-op at Antioch College. He'd worked at a summer camp for kids with rheumatic fever, which he said really helped pull him out of his own despair. So he was going to go to Antioch and major in phys ed, but then changed it to language and literature because, as he said, he realized he needed to get it out of his gut. He needed to find a way to deal with his trauma.
Mm. Yeah. Your dad wrote a Twilight Zone episode called The Big Tall Wish for the first season of the show. Can you tell us about this episode?
Yeah, I wasn't aware of it when he wrote it. I was, 4 years old, but I think Mark Zickrey summed it up best. He said, the casting of African Americans in a dramatic show not dealing with racial issues was practically unheard of and deliberate on my dad's part. My father had a great respect for boxing. He'd actually boxed in college to earn some extra money. It's a lovely episode. It's the relationship between the fighter and this little boy, and the little boy urging the fighter to believe in magic. It's a very tender, wonderful story.
Henry, I can't believe. I'm too old, and I'm too hurt to believe. I can't, boy. Just can't. Now, Henry, there ain't no such thing as magic. God help us both. I wish there were.
Bully, you got to believe.
I can't.
You got to believe. You got to believe.
I can't.
Please.
I can't.
How was your father able to separate work from family? Because he worked long hours because he wrote so many of the episodes, so many scripts. How was he able to make time for you and the rest of his family?
He'd actually written 92 of the 156 Twilight Zone episodes. And I read an article that said that he worked 12 hours a day, but I never had the sense that he wasn't available. Every day when I came home from school, when I was younger, he and I would play basketball. There were times when I knew my father wasn't present and sort of writing in his head because he'd get this sort of stare on his face. And I knew I'd lost him for a few minutes.
What was it like for you to see your dad on television?
Well, I didn't watch many of the Twilight Zones while my dad was alive, but we did each Christmas watch the Christmas episode, Night of the Meek, and he had the film, and he had an office in the backyard, and we'd go out and lie on the floor and watch it, and it was thrilling. There's my dad, on the soundstage with what looks like snow falling on his jacket.
But in just a moment, Mr. Henry Corwin, Ersatz Santa Claus, will enter a strange kind of North Pole, which is one part the wondrous spirit of Christmas and one part the magic that can only be found in the Twilight Zone.
It was exciting.
Mm-hmm. I can imagine it would be. That, of course, is the episode with Art Carney playing Santa Claus, right?
Exactly, yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How did your classmates and friends react to your dad appearing on TV?
I knew my dad was a writer, but the first time I learned exactly what he was writing was kind of a mean boy on the playground asked me if I was something out of the Twilight Zone, and also said, where's your dad get all his ideas, hanging from the ceiling? And of course, I went home and asked my dad what that meant, and he explained that he wrote a series, that it was a little too old for me, and whatever explanation he gave sufficed. As I got older, my friends who had never met my dad would sort of have this apprehension, uh-oh, here's the guy from the Twilight Zone. And within moments, my father could make really anyone comfortable. He'd ask about their parents. He'd ask what they were doing, what they liked. So it was an easy relationship. And my friends adored him.
Yeah, and I can imagine they would, yeah. What is your all-time favorite Twilight Zone episode? Do you have one?
I love the episodes that go back in time, that are sort of my father's autobiographical scripts, Walking Distance. But I think one of my favorites, and this was one that actually I had not watched while my father was alive, was In Praise of Pip, where as I was watching it, I realized that my dad used dialogue from a routine that he and I used to do. Who's your best buddy? You are, Pop.
You remember what I used to say, Pip, you remember?
I remember.
I used to say, hey, Pip, who's your best buddy?
Hey, Pop, you're my best buddy.
So it was quite a poignant moment because I sort of found my father in the Twilight Zone.
Hmm. Yeah, interesting. Were you able to watch your father's later series, Night Gallery?
Yes, actually, I think I was 15 when Night Gallery aired, and I wrote about this in the book too. I had been babysitting, and I can't remember what the call people used to get to see if they were watching a specific show and to get their ratings. And when the kids that I was babysitting went to bed, I called this people's number and pretended that I was from this place. Oh, are you watching the Night Gallery? And some silly thing. But yes, I was. And I think my favorite Night Gallery episode was they're tearing down Tim Riley's bar.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to an exhibit of the eerie and the oddball. Our first offering this evening, faces, paint, pigment, and desperation. The quiet desperation of men over 40 who keep hearing footsteps behind them and are torn between a fear and a compulsion to look over their shoulders. The painting is called They're Tearing Down Tim Riley's Bar.
Again, like Walking Distance, a very autobiographical, lovely, lovely script that he was nominated for an Emmy for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great episode. It's been nearly 50 years since your father passed. Why do you think we are still talking about your dad's writing and The Twilight Zone?
I think we're still talking about it because my dad dealt with the human condition and moral issues and things that we're all sadly still dealing with today. That, you know, that my dad was very vocal and disheartened and enraged about racism, mob mentality, marginalizing, isolation. And I've said this before, and I'm certainly not unique in saying this, but times change and people don't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How did writing your memoir affect your feelings about the passing of your dad?
Well, it was, in a sense, cathartic, of course. It was a joy to spend every day with him, thinking about him, writing about him, researching, hearing what people had said about him. After the publication of my memoir, hearing from people who wrote me the most unexpected, lovely things about how the influence that my dad had had on their lives, some that said they became writers because of my father. And most interesting, some of these people came from rather tumultuous childhoods and said they thought of my dad as their own father. I heard from a guy who had been a conscientious objector who had hidden out in a church basement and had said that my father literally saved his life. Hearing my father's voice, not to give up hope, that no matter what the future brings, we're going to be okay.
Yeah, which is a good message, an optimistic message. Did you become a writer because of your father?
Well, I'd actually written a lot of poetry as a kid, and I will confess to a lot of it was really pretty dreadful. But my father was very encouraging, and I always knew if he liked it because he would talk about a certain poem for days, and if he didn't like it, he would declare it interesting.
Hmm. Yeah. I understand you're working on a novel. Is there anything you can tell us about it?
Well, it's a novel I've been working on for years, and I've actually somewhat set it aside. It's about the struggles in a family and a mother who vanishes and how that mystery comes to play out and the family find themselves through trauma.
Hmm. Interesting. Anne Serling, thank you very much for joining us today. It was an honor to talk to you about your father. Congratulations on As I Knew Him, My Dad, Rod Serling. It's a great book and a fitting tribute to your dad.
Thank you so much, Doug. It's been enjoyable.
Anne Serling is the author of As I Knew Him, My Dad, Rod Serling. Find out more at wpr.org/beta. Well, that does it for this edition of Beta. Thanks to our guests, Glenn Kenny, Julia Masley, and Anne Serling.
What you're gleaning from these interviews is groundbreaking.
Beta is available to follow on Spotify or wherever you catch your favorite pods. Don't forget to offer a rating or to share with new alphas. And you can keep up with us during the week online at wpr.org/beta.
Even for the internet, it's pretty shocking.
Beta is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Red Meat Productions.
Fantastic!
Our music and technical director is Steve Gotcher.
He's a real hothead!
Our executive producer is Adam Friedrich.
So cycle night to the bad guy!
And thanks to you, our alphas. More Beta comes your way next week. Until then, I'm Doug Gordon.
They're not stopping me. I could go right to the top.